Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
One of the saddest things in my sports career has been watching athletes make a pile of money only to go broke. Sometimes they just spend it all away, but mostly it's people stealing it from them on rotten investments. Well, it's popped up again as Kansas City financial advisor Doug Elston is being investigated by the Securities and Exchange Commission for apparently ripping off Will Shields, Darren Sproles, Paul George, and others. I know Doug a little, and I'll share my thoughts of how this stuff happens. While we wait for Kansas and Missouri to pass sports gaming bills, one online company says they'll take your bet in these states because it's legal, because Kansas and Missouri don't specifically prohibit it. I'll tell you who that company is. The Derek Chauvin trial continues in Minneapolis, and here's my promise to you. I'll share this trial with you straight, unlike the liberal media, and I'll let you know when something important happens so you don't have to follow it so closely. Fair enough? Joe Biden's working on the biggest tax increase in history. He's got a disaster at the border, and his dog keeps biting people at the White House. Ah, there's nothing to see here. Let's just line him up for a Nobel Prize at this point. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell says he expects full stadiums in the fall. Does that mean with or without masks? A new Hummer EV is auctioned off for charity. You will not believe how much it fetched. Pizza Hut is making some big changes. And an episode of SpongeBob is canceled. Because of course it is. We've got it all for you on this episode of Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Brought to you by Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet Buick GMC in Excelsior Springs. Customers say at Roberts Robinson, we just make it easy. And if you're interested in the new Hummer EV, why don't you give them a call? Call Mike up there or Tim at Roberts Robinson and say, hey, I'm interested in this. How do I order one? I don't think they're going to be available on showroom floors really for quite some time. But you can order a new Hummer EV right through Roberts Robinson by giving them a call. And they'll walk you all the way through the process. These are going to be incredibly popular and valuable vehicles. The Hummer EV. Yes, you can get that at robertsrobinson.com. Just give him a call and he will work your way through that with you and help you find exactly what you're looking for, because we just make it easy at Roberts Robinson in Excelsior Springs, online at robertsrobinson.com. Elite Automation, making your building great again. Elite Automation specializes in retrofitting HVAC control systems for perfect maximum comfort and savings. If you mention KKHI, they're going to provide 12 months cloud hosting absolutely free for you. It only takes a couple of years to get all your money back when you put these new control panels in your building. What's your building costing you now? If you've got a school, church, warehouse, you can save big. And if you have a mechanical contracting company, if you work with so many different building operators, give Elite a call. They can help you and your clients. 913-766-2188. That's 766-2188 for Elite Automation. Online at EliteAutomate.com. And my buddy Chris over at B-Stock says, here we go. The television new model year is here for the 2021. So while they don't have the new inventory coming in yet from 2021, they're clearing out the 20s. So they got a lot of them at B-Stock. Their website now has a function called Make Offer. While B-Stock doesn't usually take lower offers on the lower-end TVs, all right, like the 50-inch TU-7000, they're selling for $249. They're never going less than $249. That's an insanely low price. But if you're interested in the mid or higher end TVs right now, you can go on the website, bstock.net. There's a function called Make Offer. These 2020 models got to go. They're brand new. They got a full warranty and they got to go. Now's the time to bargain, in addition to the already low prices, at bstock.net, or visit their outlet store showroom, 14680 South Flaming Road in Olathe. And our friends at back9development.com, back9development.com, a custom licensed general contractor featuring the Solheim condominiums at Grandmere, online at back9development.com. We got a lot of topics today. This is going to be a fun one. Let's do it. Why waste any time? Hit it.
Back9 Development is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, online at back9development.com.
So one of the most troubling things for me covering sports for some 36 years now has been, I guess, sort of an emotional or personal thing that I've observed over the years that I've learned to just kind of live with. And like anything else in life, when something becomes routine, it sort of rolls off your back and you don't think too much about it. But a story popped up this week that led me to remember some of the feelings that I've had through the years about athletes individually, about players, athletes, things of this nature. When you first start in the business, and for me, I will essentially call that 1985 when I first started covering the Royals. I had covered high school and college athletics before that, but let's just cut to the chase. In 1985, I was an intern at Channel 4, and I was covering the Kansas City Royals, and I'd grown up that George Brett was my hero. Denny Matthews was a hero of mine, you know, broadcasting games, and you know, I had all these aspirations of a sports journalism career and covering these athletes that I admired so much and grew up wanting to meet and know and idolize. And so there I was in 1985 covering the Royals for the very first time, and it's you're awestruck. And there's no other way to describe it. The first time you're interviewing George Brett or you're around one of your childhood heroes, you're very nervous. You can't believe where you are. You want to pinch yourself. I'll never forget my first day in the press box at Kauffman Stadium. They played a song by Katrina and the Waves called Walking on Sunshine during one of the between-inning moments, and I just got these goosebumps, and I couldn't believe that I had a press credential, and I was covering the Kansas City Royals, and it's just an indelible moment you never forget. But you get into the business thinking for the right reasons, but early on you recognize that idolizing the people you're covering or things of that nature, it's not going to work. That's just, you very quickly find out, and this has nothing to do with George Brett or Denny Matthews. I was merely pointing out to you how much they meant to me. And they've both been very kind to me throughout my career. So they're not the issue here at all. But as you start covering these things, and the first time you walk in a clubhouse and you see a player smoking a cigarette or drinking a beer after the game, you're like, uh-oh, there's a wake-up call. There's something I didn't really expect. But I would have to say that the overwhelming thing for me throughout my career was watching what happened to athletes after they played. While they're playing, they're tremendous physical specimens. Obviously, they're tremendous athletes at the height of their game. They're living the dream that most of us as kids wanted to live out. We wanted to be professional athletes. There are not very many kids that play sports that don't at least somewhere in the back of their mind think, boy, it sure would be cool to be a professional athlete when I grow up. It's what so many American children aspire to do, and really kids around the world, and there is nothing wrong with that. As long as you understand the realities that your chances aren't very good, and you have parents who ground you a little bit and say, if you really like sports, find another way, Kev, because you're not going to be a Major League Baseball player. All right? You might be able to play a little bit in college. You're not fast enough. you don't have enough power in your bat. It's not going to happen for you, okay? So that helps a lot to have people in your life that ground you a little bit and teach you those things and show you a different pathway to be around something that I loved as much as I loved sports. But as I watched some of these players from the 85 Royals go into retirement and see what happens, and I'll give you some examples here shortly. And then most predominantly after I returned from Joplin to Kansas City, I spent more time, I think, covering the Chiefs or around the Chiefs. The Chiefs became a bigger deal than the Royals very quickly. Marty Schottenheimer and Carl Peterson were here. Joe Montana became the quarterback in the early 90s. There was just a lot going on with the Chiefs that they were the bigger story. And these players had very short careers, 2 or 3 years. And after it was over, they would call the TV station and say, man, I'm trying to find something to do after football here. I don't know what to do. Can you teach me how to be on TV or things like that? And agents would call and say, we're trying to play so-and-so who only played a couple of years for the Chiefs. We're trying to get him a job maybe as an analyst on your Sunday night show or something to get them into broadcasting because they'd made pretty good money maybe since they got drafted. They maybe had a 3 or 4 year career, a first contract, and made what I thought was ridiculously great money at the time because I wasn't making very much. And these people would be calling, looking for work, trying to figure out what they're going to do at age 26, 27, something like that. I was about that age. So I kind of sympathized with it, but I've always been in the long game. I've said it many times here. I've always been in this as a long game. I love what I do. I don't want to stop doing it. I don't need to be the richest guy in the world. I'm more than happy to keep doing what I love and play the long game and let my investments work for me over time and retire as so many Americans do. And I think I'll be able to retire comfortably and that'll be great. So I've always thought like that. I'm no great investor or anything like that, but I've stayed with it. I've been diligent. And I think that's an important thing for most people to learn. I've tried to teach my kids. I don't think they're doing as well as I'd like them to do as far as saving for when they're older. It's very hard to convince young people of that. But I would watch these athletes and they'd just be flat broke. And I would, you know, either meet with them or see them at the TV station, or we'd do story and we'd see them pull up in these beat up old cars. And you're like, what in the world happened? This person made, you know, $380,000 4 years in a row. And now they're 27 and there's nothing. And a lot of times they were spendthrifts. They'd spend money and not watch what they were doing. But what I learned over and over and over, and part of this I learned from Dan Hughes, I work with the NFL Players Association, and there are many groups out there with the NFLPA, but there are also former baseball players in the same situation, and certainly plenty of NBA players, is how they just wind up broke. No matter what they made, they wind up broke. We have seen this in the news recently with Frank White, who's the Jackson County executive, and it is hard to understand how someone like Frank White could live, I won't say a life of privilege. I don't know that he's lived a life of privilege, but the Royals have given him one job after another. He has been a coach. He has been a broadcaster. He has done all these different things. He's an elected official. He makes a fine salary as the county executive. He has all the opportunity in the world to do endorsements. I've worked with Frank White. I've had him as a regular guest on my show. I find him to be affable, likable, and a wonderful man who tells great stories. I like Frank White. How he's been broke all these years is beyond me. It simply has to be that he doesn't care, doesn't pay attention to it, assumes things are just going to be okay. I don't know. I don't know what happens with people, and I don't know everybody's individual circumstances. But the overwhelming number one thing is just flat out bad investments. People with millions of dollars retire at a young age and go, oh, well, making money sure is easy. I'm going to invest with this guy and do this and this and this. I've said this many times. If you can start and operate a business successfully, that's awesome. If you try it a second time or a third time or a fourth time, my personal philosophy is now you're doing it as a hobby. You better have enough to play with and say, this is my passion. You know, I want to do this over, I want to get in the golf business over on the side. Well, be prepared to lose money if you want to get in the golf business, right? Because golf's your passion or something like that. Just be prepared to lose money. Don't think of it as, oh, I started this company over here, you know, an HVAC company or something, and made all this money in plumbing and HVAC, so now I think I can go into the golf industry. My experience is watching people do that. I personally know one person that has started multiple businesses, and they've all been successful, but they've all been relatively the same business, very similar businesses. When people go and try and change and do something different, for example, you're a ball player, and now you want to go own restaurants, that doesn't work. You want to be a car dealer or what? It doesn't work. We see it over and over and over, and it's just tragic to see what has happened with so many athletes through the years. And it's an epidemic in sports. It is. And people try. I think agents are the biggest problem here. That's just me. Well, that's not fair. The athlete individually is the biggest problem. That's the bit that is not close. That's the biggest problem. But if we're looking for a safety net for athletes, I always look to agents first. If you have a good agent that's made a lot of money off you and you've made a whole bunch of money in your career, that agent's done very, very well. They should have a vested interest in making sure you're not blowing your money as well. If they're taking a cut, they should be watching over whatever you're doing investment-wise. They should be advising you. That person should just be more than, hey, I'm going to go negotiate a contract with your team when you're at the height of your career. It really should be a firm or someone that stays with you for life. And there are some great firms out there that do that. And they do financial advising and they do everything all in one under one umbrella. And they do a fine job. And there's more and more of those. And the bigger ones are the better ones because I think they keep these clients for life. Long after football or baseball, if you have a $30 million portfolio, these folks are still with you. They're people that were with you at the height of your career, and now they're with you when you need to just live off your money because you really don't have any other skills to go do anything else to live the lifestyle you've been living. That's another thing, too. It's not like these folks are willing to go work for $40,000 a year, have a spouse that makes $40,000 a year, you know, rent a little house in Mission, Kansas, raise a couple of kids, and live off that. That's not their lifestyle. So it's a very complicated issue. But there is, as we've watched so many athletes, and this happened to so many athletes, there's a man that I've known for years. I don't know him well. We're not personal friends. I've been around him a few times. He lived in my neighborhood at Falcon Ridge and Lenexa, and he is in trouble with the feds. His name is Doug Elston. He played basketball at Kansas and North Carolina. He is being investigated by the Securities and Exchange Commission right now for defrauding clients, including high-profile athletes, overcharging them, putting them in risky investments, millions of dollars in losses. As I said, I know him. His own lawyer admits to wrongdoing, basically paints a picture that Doug tried too hard, tried to wear too many hats. He had a company called Crossroads Investments that closed in 2019, but Doug has been doing this for decades. He's been having athletes as clients. His highest profile names that you would know are Hall of Famer Will Shields, Darren Sproles, Paul George, the basketball player from the Clippers. For his part, Elston and his lawyer say they're going to try to make good on some of these losses with these athletes, but I received a text from a friend last night as this was going down saying that they had heard, and I cannot corroborate this in any way. I can't. I can corroborate that we have known in the past, because we know some people that know Darren Sproles, that Doug Elston was the financial advisor for Darren Sproles, who's had a wonderful career and made tens of millions of dollars playing football, but is no longer able to make that kind of money. He's retired. He's out of football. And there are whispers that Darren Sproles has lost millions and millions and millions of dollars through Doug Elston. I can't corroborate that. I can't prove that. I fear for Will Shields, who played at a time where you didn't make as much money as a guy like Darren Sproles would have made, a younger man. But Will Shields is a nice man. He has a ton of friends, does great things in Kansas City, as does Darren Sproles. And I just get really worried for these people. If they had, let's say they had 80% of what they had tied up there. The rest, you know, maybe they kept in bank accounts, real estate, actual assets, you know, hard assets. Maybe, I mean, I don't know, but it could all just all be gone. This happens all the time. And Doug Elston has always been nice enough to me when I've been around him or around other people. But I'll cut you in on a little thing that we've always done, because so many of us know Doug, and I don't want to make this about bad-mouthing Doug, although it doesn't look good for him. I'm not a client of his. A lot of you, when, like at the patron party, so many of you were talking about stocks. You know, I've mentioned many times I've liked the tech stocks. Well, looking back 10 years, I wish I had invested more in the tech stocks, okay? But I didn't, because that was too risky. And I'm a long game guy, right? I say that all the time. That doesn't make me right. That doesn't make me wrong. It's the choice that I make. We all make these choices. I am no financial expert. I'm far from it. I'm not. Okay, I know that I don't like debt. I know I like paying for things when I buy them, period, end of statement. And I don't ever want to live with debt. That's just not something that I like to do. And I like to invest my money for when I want to retire and do whatever the heck I want to do and live off that money. And I would like to leave some money for my children or grandchildren. That's it. It's a pretty simple plan. I think a lot of people aspire to those things. When I see this happen, and we've known Doug, and we've known that he's represented some players, and I've been in sports my whole life. And so I've had this conversation so many times, normally, you know, watching sports with buddies over beers. This isn't generally stuff that we talk with our wives about. Okay, this is guy talk. And I was reminded by a different friend last night about a conversation that we had at Johnny's Tavern at K-10 in Ridgeview a few years ago when Mr. Elston was there. And he had made some comments, and I said some things back to him, and there was nothing, it was all good. It was okay. My friend remembered far more about the conversation than I did. What I remembered was the conversation that I had with my friends afterwards, because Doug was there, but he was not really with us. He came over and approached us and spoke and knows one of my other friends pretty well and just chatted for 5 minutes and went back about his business, and everything was fine. Again, there's nothing I can say negative about this person in any interactions that I've had in any way. This story looks bad for Mr. Elston. It looks really bad, and it looks even worse for his clients at this point. Like, they may have been defrauded out of millions. So there's nothing good here. But as he returned to sit with where he was sitting, I vividly remember the conversation. We started talking, and one of our friends said, you know, I really like Doug. I've seen him at the golf course, and he's really a nice guy and this and that. And I, of course, butt my nose in. I said, really? Have you invested anything with him? And the friend said, no, you know, I'm somewhere else. And then I'm a question asker. I think you know that. My nature is that I'm inquisitive, right? And so here comes the topic of conversation. Would you ever invest any of your money with Doug Elston? And one of the friends was saying, you know, I think so. You know, if I wanted to split it up, my money's over here invested in this or whatever. And my other friend was like, nope, I've got a guy and I like my guy and that's that. And I said, I would never invest with any financial advisor that has athletes. I've seen too many of these stories. This was maybe 10 years ago that I said that about Doug, and I had no reason to believe that Doug was doing anything wrong. And I had no reason, you know, with any interactions with him or knowing anything about him or his business at that point, to think that if he called me and put a full court press on me, a sales pitch, hey, what about my investments? I'm positive I would not have invested with him. And this is a terrible bias, but we all have some biases here and there. Mine would have been, you have too many athletes in your portfolio. All right. That's too easy. Knowing athletes and the money they make, I don't have that kind of money. First thing is, I'm going to be a small fish for you. I'm going to be very small player. And I don't want to be attached to the things that you're getting those people in. Because if you start collecting money from every one of your clients and investing it for them in some of these things, it's much easier to take big risks that wind up turning into Ponzi schemes or whatever with athletes' money. That was never going to be for me, but I've just generally had a rule. I'm not going to invest my money or be with any financial advisors that have athletes. I've seen this world. I know what this world is, and it's awful. And I feel sick today for Will Shields, Darren Sproles, Paul George. I don't know their individual circumstances, but we know that he was in charge of their money. My suspicion is they have now known for a couple of years that he has blown their money, that this is not news to them. Somebody had to turn him in to the SEC, right? So my guess is that's how it's all happened, and that these folks have lost millions and millions of dollars at the hands of Doug Elston, and it makes me very happy to be with the firm that I'm with that has my retirement and my investments all in one portfolio, of which I can pretty much rattle off what I have, and I get a checkup every 3 months on it and know exactly where it is, and we're not opening restaurants, and we're not trying to do second and third businesses, and we're not trying to do this. We're in very stable mutual funds or stocks that I like that he agrees. And, you know, it's kind of a dual system. I'll say, hey, when I got into the Apple stock, I said, hey, I really want to get Apple. Is that okay? And he's like, I think that's a really good idea. You know, I respect his advice to say, no, I wouldn't get into technology right now. You should be over here in this or think about this. Let's find a different company for you. And that then the process begins on something like that. But I'm just not into risky investments or startups or doing new things. This is as risky as I'm getting right now, and that's doing a podcast, and I'm doing it with my own money, and I'm in charge of the whole thing, and I can live with that. I'm not investing with somebody else. I don't know how these people allow people to just invest their money willy-nilly, but it's happened here again in Kansas City, apparently, as the SEC is investigating Doug Elston, a financial advisor for professional athletes, including Will Shields, Darren Sproles, and Paul George. And I'm telling you, this has been one of the toughest things in my career, is to watch what happens to these athletes. And I shouldn't pick sides here, but there is sort of a factor in this thing with Darren Sproles that you look at and you go, oh man, that is really bad for Darren Sproles to be involved in this thing. Really bad. Bally Sports Kansas City is debuting Thursday. If you have cable television, you're going to be watching it. It's no longer Fox Sports Kansas City. Bally Sports KC is basically Bally Sports is gambling. It's sports gambling, and everyone's competing for this space. It may sound like a complete contradiction for me to say that I like to bet a little money on sporting events, but I'm very conservative with all my investments. But it's true, and most of the people that we run with love to put a $20 bet on a round of golf or $50 on a Chiefs game or something of this nature, and sometimes we'll play against each other or whatever, and I don't have an app yet, but I think I will when the time comes, and I see it as entertainment, especially if I'm sitting at home watching a game. There's something entertaining about it. It's something that I've been able to handle pretty well through the years. I'm not going to sit here and brag and say I make money or, you know, it's anything like that. For me, it's entertainment, and I've been able to handle it, and it doesn't lead to giant bets that are wrecking my kids' college education or things like that. That's not been my case. So, you know, to me, it's just live your life, and life is good. And Bally Sports Kansas City is going to be promoting basically betting on games. The problem Bally Sports Kansas City has in this operation now, I think they have 19 of the Major League Baseball teams. In most of those cities, you can place bets through Bally's app. You'll be able to watch the baseball game and bet on whether the Royals will score. Third inning's coming up. Will the Royals score in the third inning? Bet $5, yes or no. My mom has told me she'd like to get on this and bet $5 a game on the Royals and see how it does for the year. I said, well, Mom, there's odds in baseball. A lot of nights, the Royals are going to be big underdogs. If you bet five, you could win seven or eight. And she says, I just want to see what would happen if I bet the same amount on all 162 games. I said, great. Good for you. That's fantastic. That will be the greatest, cheapest entertainment for my mom ever. So if you bet five a game, the worst you can lose here is $800, right, for the entire season. That's the worst you could do. Well, you can't, because they'd have to lose against the spread 162 times, and that's not going to happen. So assuming they win 60 games, I think it could be a complete disaster for her, and I think the worst she would lose is $100, right? So I've encouraged her. I said, we get you an app. We're going to get you going. You bet $5 a game. She has this little, my mom is so lovely. She has this little, I don't even know what you call it. It looks like, a candle thing, but there's no candle in it, and it has a lid on it. It's a little pottery thing. It has a little top that comes off. It's like a little pot. It's very small. It's about the size of your iPhone. Well, depends on your iPhone. I have the iPhone 10, so it's about the size of the iPhone 10. And I'm with her on Sunday. I go change a couple of light bulbs for her and do a couple of things at her place. And she shows me this. She walks over to me and she hands it to me. And it's heavy. I'm like, oh my gosh, what's in that? She says, open it. And I pull the top off of it and it's flush with nickels. They play nickel poker 3 days a week where she lives, and she's been on a roll. And her thing is overflowing with nickels. And this is my mom that wants to play $5 a game on Royals games. She likes a little action. And I think that's just awesome. I mean, it's just incredible that she likes to do that. And nobody loves the Royals more than my mom. So I looked into this a little bit more. I'm like, the Kansas House yesterday decided not to vote on the sports gambling bill. But the Senate has a separate bill. The Kansas House bill was never going to pass. It was going to allow gambling in Quick Trip and have kiosks everywhere in like 1,500 locations around the state, retail outlets. It never had a chance of passing because the Senate wasn't going to pass it and the governor wasn't going to sign it. What they want to do in Kansas is give this to the casinos, really only the casinos, not the racetracks, not these other sites, right? They want the casinos to have it. And then the casinos partner up with a company that will let you put an app on your phone, and you can do it all through your phone without coming to the casino. That's the Senate bill. So a lot of people panicked yesterday that the House didn't vote on their bill. It had no chance. So as I'm researching this, and I'm still hopeful that it will get passed this year and we could be able to play games by September, I find a site, and many of you have contacted me and said, well, where can I do this in Kansas? And I said, well, you really can't do it yet, I don't think. But now I found a source that showed me four different companies that have said there's a federal law that allows betting on sports. Each state has the right to have its own laws. Right now, Kansas does not have a law on the books. Essentially is where they are, that there's no law on the books. It doesn't say you can't bet. It doesn't say you can. It doesn't say how. They haven't got anything passed. So there's a company called Bovada that's pretty respected in the industry, Bovada. I have not tried this yet. But if it works, I'm going to sit down with my mom and I'm going to sign her up at Bovada. I think it's bovada.net. It might be .com. Bovada, Bovada. Bovada claims they will take your bets in Kansas because they're big. They're sort of powerful. They're not afraid of a lawsuit in Kansas from Granny, 87 years old, betting $5 a game on the Royals. Their game is, we just want to get more customers any way we can. And right now, they claim they're taking bets in Kansas. I assume if they're doing that, they're taking them in Missouri too. Because I don't think there's a law in the books in Missouri that says this is illegal. And if it's not, we assume they are. So it will be interesting to see how the Royals games beginning Thursday evolve. I don't think there will be much yet, but there will be in other cities. How much they evolve and become live gambling events. And this will upset a lot of people. It will change your viewing experience. There will be times Rex will have to pipe down because somebody has to read, hey, this thing is up and there's going to be stuff on your screen that's different. I don't think it's going to start early here with the Royals. I think they're going to do this in other markets first, where there is legalized sports gaming, and evolve into what it will become. Golf is essentially trying to branch off and start doing things like the tournament is on CBS, but on Golf Channel, the same tournament becomes a gambling site for that tournament that you can bet who, you know, if Rory is playing with Sergio and they're going to the 13th hole, you can put a wager on who wins that hole. You know, it's where it's headed. Whether you want it that way or not, it's where all this stuff is headed. And the Royals are part of this with Bally Sports Kansas City. Everybody is fighting for that space. There's just no question about it. Everybody is fighting for the sports gambling space. And it is the stocks in most of these companies have just gone through the roof. It's going to be a very, very big deal in the United States because we are still, until Biden wrecks things, the richest country on earth. And people have disposable income. And people that love sports with disposable income like to bet on games. It's what they do. Oh, it's been announced by the U.S. Olympic Committee that when our athletes go to the Olympics, oh, good, they're going to be allowed to protest America. Oh, that's great. Yes. Let's go on the world stage and let's allow American athletes, just go ahead and write it in there and say, we're allowing this. So if you're, you know, have a predisposition to do this, just go for it. I mean, do the Olympics just want to fade away into oblivion? Are they just asking to say goodbye? First of all, they're not that interesting. The Olympics used to be a really big deal, but they're not that interesting. Everyone knows the world cheats and cheats us. Everyone knows it is really bad how bad the United States gets cheated in the Olympics. And with the exception of, and I'm generalizing here, there are things in the Olympics that I like. If you are a track coach or you're in track or you've been in track before, you love watching track or field or whatever. If that's your thing, it's your thing. But I'm talking about a mass broad audience. The biggest audience is the figure skating. That's the biggest audience. And that's an 80% female audience. Women love watching figure skating in the Olympics. It's a really big deal. Some people like watching our NBA players go over there and dominate the world. It doesn't really float my boat that all that much, but I'll watch. If we're just going to start kneeling and protesting everything in the United States, I'm out. Check me out. So if you're going to come to this podcast for a bunch of Olympic stuff and I start seeing that, I'm gone. I'm out. I'm not doing it. This soccer team, this women's soccer team, out. I'm already out. I'm going to tell you I'm out, and I used to like watching them. I used to like watching them every, you know, Olympics would come around or the World Cup would come around. And I'd be like, I want to watch them. They play hard. You know, they're good. All these things. I thought America's great. And now I know what Rapinoe's about. And I know what all these players are about. And they're all going to sit there with their fists in the air and get down on their knees and close their eyes and act like they're some sort of a, you know, their bitch and moan. Their complaint is that they don't make as much as men. I'm like, well, that's not true. You can't name the men's players. The women's soccer players in America are more famous than the men's players. And they've got endorsements and TV commercials, and they make all this money. They're full of crap is what they are. I don't want to hear this gender stuff out of them. The women's team, it's like women's tennis. Women's tennis is bigger than men's tennis. There's plenty of sports like that. This is not gender bias. You know, people want equality in pay. Well, you can get equal pay when you provide the equal service. And if you bring to your sport what Patrick Mahomes brings to the NFL or the Kansas City Chiefs, you'll get paid $500 million too. I don't make $500 million and I don't complain about it. I haven't put myself in a position to be worth that to someone. I mean, come on. This whole thing's absurd. I mean, I already don't like the women's soccer team, and I know that's awful. I know it's awful. Man, I see them kneeling and closing their eyes and putting fists up. I'm out. And they're basically telling them, hey, no big deal. It's all good. You can do whatever you want to do. We're brought to you by Buck Roofing, Kansas City's finest residential and commercial roofing company. Ron Buck's putting the roof on my house. I'm excited about that. He's online at rbuckroofing.com. You can call him at 384-2680 for a free roof inspection. You should do this. If you've never had your roof inspected, you should do this. Ron's a fair guy. Call him up. Ask for the free roof inspection. If there's nothing wrong with your roof, he's going to say there's nothing wrong with the roof. You'll sleep well knowing that he fixed the roof over your head. Joslyn's Jewelry, same thing. No high-pressure sale, no commission sales rep. These businesses are doing so well. All right. These businessmen that I talk about here and people that I know and represent, they're doing so well. The last thing they want to do is strong arm you into some sort of purchase. It's just not what they're about. None of these people are that way. They provide tremendous products and services at great value. And Joslyn's Jewelry's that way. And it's why you'll find out that Joslyn's is the jewel you recommend to your friends and family. Same thing at Fryer Orthodontics. They'll have you in free for the first appointment. And they'll walk you through the process of what you're trying to do with your smile or your kid's smile. Dr. Jeremy and his staff are the best anywhere. I mean anywhere. Go give them a chance to earn your business. The first appointment's free if you mention KKHI. 913-469-9191 or online at fryorthodontics.com, where your smile is just the start. I'm not going to lie, I've been watching the Derek Chauvin trial. I do a lot of office work after the podcast each day, and I've got a TV in here, and it's on, and I don't listen to all of it, but when the witness has been compelling, I watch. And there were a couple of compelling witnesses on Tuesday. And as the thing continues, it's the mundane part right now. And to be honest, some of these, look, I'm going to tell you about this trial in a different way than you're consuming it anywhere else. It's being broadcast by the liberal channels. It's not being broadcast by Fox or Newsmax or any of those, okay? So it's being broadcast by the liberal channels. And then they go to these sidebars. When they go to the sidebar, they cut the mic and they have a 5-minute sidebar and the analysts come on. And it is the most biased presentation you've ever seen. And they say things like, we watched him be murdered. We watched him be killed. We watched this. No, that's what this trial is about. The trial is about, was he killed? Was he murdered? Was it manslaughter? Or was it a drug overdose? That's what the trial's about. So anybody that comes on and starts talking about it, it's disingenuous to say otherwise. So I'm going to tell you about the trial in a fair fashion, a very fair fashion. But it will also involve me saying things about the people the other media love that I think are unbecoming. So we talk about the credibility of witnesses. A woman walks into the booth 2 days ago, and the judge says, I am not kidding. She has her purse on her right arm or right elbow. And she comes in, and the judge says, raise your right hand. And she raises her left hand. I'm not kidding. And he allowed it. He's allowed it. Said, do you honestly tell the truth or nothing but the truth? So help you God, I do. Okay, good. She sits down, starts giving her testimony. It is remarkable, the witnesses that were on the street corner, to hear them testify. It is such a struggle for some of them to get through, to understand what's going on. And then their default position is to say the same thing. They've obviously been coached by the prosecution. These are prosecution's witnesses at this point. They've obviously been coached. At some point while I'm talking to you, please say that you were standing there watching somebody get murdered. And they all say, I just felt like I was standing there watching somebody get murdered. And they say it. And, oh, it's powerful. It's the most powerful thing. Look, the most powerful thing is the video. It's dreadful. It's awful. Derek Chauvin is not a sympathetic person. He does not appear to be likable. We've never seen a picture of him smiling. He doesn't seem to be a guy you'd be sympathetic with. There are problems with this trial. There are many problems with this trial for him. The video is the biggest one. That's the biggest one. The second biggest one, in my opinion, is he's sitting over there wearing a mask. What have we learned? What have we been conditioned to learn our entire lives about people wearing masks? And these things matter in a trial. And I know everybody's wearing a mask, but it doesn't matter. They're focused in on the defendant. He's wearing a mask. So what have we been taught our whole lives? Two things about people wearing masks. There's only two things that I can think of. Maybe there's more, but what are the two things? The first thing that comes to mind is you're a bandit. You're a crook. You're about ready to rob somebody or steal something. You've got a mask on. You're already guilty of committing a crime because you're wearing a mask in here to commit a crime. That's the first thing I think of when I see somebody wearing a mask, is they're about to commit a crime. That's number one. The second thing is, it may not be fair, second thing is, I think you live in a third world country. If you're wearing a mask, you're living somewhere I don't live, in a big open space where we have great health care and everybody's safe and whatever. I think, boy, you must live in a ridiculously bad place that you walk around and wear a mask every day. Those are the biases that I bring to this. But guess what? There's a jury sitting there that have the same biases. Whether they're willing to say them, like I'm willing to say what I think, whether they're willing to say it or not, I can't speak to that. But it doesn't matter. It's in their head. So I'm sorry. It couldn't be worse for Derek Chauvin. It just couldn't be worse. It's a pandemic on top of the video. And he's sitting there with a mask on and he looks terrible. He just looks guilty. And they've coached him, don't look away from your legal pad. Just sit there and act like you're taking notes the whole time, which is the way of saying, I'm not paying attention to this witness. This witness isn't that important. I get all that. The defense team, it's pretty interesting. It's one guy, Eric Nelson, but he's got a dozen lawyers as a team behind him. They've got him in the police defense fund to pay for, but to the jury, there's a dream team over on the other side. Like Obama appointees have flown in from Washington, D.C. to prosecute Chauvin. All right, the Dems are all over this. The D.C. powerhouse have sent in their biggest attorneys. They've got an assistant attorney general. They've got all these big shots in here prosecuting this case. And you can't see it on TV as much, but apparently there's like 8 or 9 people over there. It's this giant team of lawyers against this poor one little guy and Derek Chauvin. So he's trying to play this underdog thing, which I get. But there's just a lot of problems with this, including the video. And they just keep playing different versions of the video, and none of them are any good. But here's what you won't get in the other media. There's multiple charges here. There's a couple of murder charges and a manslaughter charge. I don't know how, I mean, already, I don't know how you can say he murdered him. I just don't know how you can say that. Murder got thrown out a couple times. And then the attorney general in the state of Minnesota said, you're putting it back in. We're going for murder. They are almost certain that they're not getting murder conviction here, right? Because you actually watch him when it's over. Chauvin helps him. He lifts him up. He puts him on the gurney. He helps get him into the ambulance and all that stuff. That's not the move of a murderer. The medical examiner's already said there was no bruising on the neck. There is no sign at any point that George Floyd was asphyxiated, that his airflow was cut off. These are things that MEs can tell in the autopsy. There's no sign of any of that. The death has basically been ruled cardio asphyxia. His lungs and heart exploded on him because of amphetamines and fentanyl. It was a drug overdose. They even had a witness on the stand yesterday, and I don't think they wanted this witness to say it. She was a firefighter who just happened to be walking by there on her day off, and she says, well, yeah, you know, we go on a lot of drug overdose calls, so resuscitating people is a pretty common thing in our job. And she's a firefighter, not an EMT. She says, we get responses all the time to these things where people aren't breathing because this is a neighborhood where we work that has a lot of drug overdoses. I'm like, oh boy, I don't think the prosecution wanted her to say that. But she did. And clearly the defense is building a case of, look, the video was 9 minutes long. If he was choking him, it would have only taken seconds to choke him off. He didn't. They were not applying much pressure. He was helping him keep his head down because he'd already been in the squad car where he banged his head, bloodied his nose, was freaking out on drugs, and they had to somehow subdue him. Did you know when police arrived on the scene, George Floyd was passing counterfeit bills in a store? They called the police on him. They get there. He has drugs on him. George Floyd has fentanyl and amphetamines on him. And when the cops arrive, because he's on probation from previous drug charges, he doesn't want to get popped in possession. So what does he do with the drugs? He eats them. George Floyd takes them. When the police get there, he takes the drugs on him. He didn't want to throw them on the ground because they'd have found them. There was no place to flush, apparently. He just takes them. Whatever he had on him, however much that was, he took them. I mean, this is going to be an unbelievable case. I'll tell you right now what nobody else will tell you. The facts of this case are on Derek Chauvin's side. Nothing else is. Media's against him. The video's horrific. His actions look despicable. The facts are what he did was within the police guidelines. The facts are the medical examiner says he never cut off his airflow. The facts are there was no bruising, no injury to the neck, nothing to George Floyd from this incident. Nothing. The facts are the medical examiner has basically said his heart exploded from a drug overdose. And by the way, he had an enlarged heart before and has had problems with this in the past and almost died. All the facts are on Chauvin's side. The video is not. The witnesses are not. They all want the cop to rot. And the media is not. I literally saw a guy yesterday say, he came out on CNN during one of the breaks. He was an African-American professor of law somewhere in the Ivy League, maybe. I forget which school. Fancy school name. And they said, what is your take on these witnesses that brought this? And he said, this is about 400 years of injustice in this country. That's exactly what this case is about. It's about oppression. And, you know, he rattled this stuff off. And I thought, wait a second. This guy's a law professor? I didn't go to law school. I'm 100% right on this one. I'll just spit this one out. This is 100%. The trial is never about history. The trial is about what happened that day. That's it. Lady Justice is blind. There is no context, and they've stated this many times. This is not about social justice or politics. This case is about what happened that day and the facts around the event. Now, do you think you can get a jury in this case to rule that way? I don't. I think they're going to get him for at least manslaughter. They may get him for murder. I don't know. The video's damning. It's awful. But the facts really aren't. The media doesn't want the facts out there. I don't know what CNN and these other channels are going to do when the defense starts calling witnesses and they bring in the medical examiner and says, I don't think the knee had anything to do with George Floyd dying. I don't know what they're going to do when that happens. They're going to come out and just say the medical examiner's racist? I don't know what's going to happen, because there's going to be plenty of evidence for Derek Chauvin that benefits him, whether you like it or not, because I don't like what Derek Chauvin did. I don't know anybody that likes what he did. It looks awful, and it should be stricken, and it has in Minneapolis and many other places. This knee to the neck move is gone from police handbooks. It really is not advisable. I don't understand it. I don't know how it was legal and part of the deal, but it is, and it was, and it needs to be gone. What we saw was horrific. There's no question. But it's a crazy trial, and it's on. I'll keep you updated. If you don't want to watch, I'll keep you updated when something really interesting happens, I promise. The Biden plan is getting ready to go into effect. This is going to be over $2 trillion more dollars, right? Or almost three. This is the biggest tax increase in American history. If you work, your taxes will go up. If you own a business, your taxes will go up. If you don't work, you'll receive money from the government. That's what's in this. They're calling it an infrastructure bill, but again, only about a fourth of it is infrastructure. The rest of it is cookies and donuts. Joe Biden is putting this plan forth that will forever change America, in my estimation. This is the bill that will move us to a universal basic income in this country. And I think that's where we're headed. I guess if we had enough money from these giant corporations, if we taxed, you know, Apple or Google, Microsoft, all these companies, if that's where the money came from for universal income, I think I'd be okay with it. Taxing families that make $75,000 a year combined to give to other people that don't work is just the worst idea I've ever heard. It's awful. It's awful, and it's in there, and your taxes are going up. I think that's a pretty big deal. I'm going to rattle off a few topics here. And I'm asking the question, what do you think the media would be doing reacting if Donald Trump had things like this going on? So we know how they reacted when Trump was lowering taxes. Their heads exploded. They didn't like that. The border poll numbers are a disaster for Joe Biden. His handling of the border is awful. Over a third of the people that voted for him, Democrats, over a third of them hate what he's doing at the border. And so I'd ask the question of those people, did you not know he was doing this? After all the stink Trump made about the border, you didn't think Biden was, if you didn't know that the day they got in, they were going to do everything they could to blow up anything Trump has done and make him look bad, I can't help you. So a third of Biden's voters are mad at him right now for his handling of the border. There is a very large concern for a lice outbreak. A lot of these kids now have lice. It's very difficult to control. One in seven of the kids coming in have COVID. This is at the best facility. They opened up their best facility in Donna, Texas yesterday and said, we'll let the media shoot this. They found kids with lice. One in seven have COVID. They're overcrowded by 700%. And this is the best facility. America's right. Like 4% of Republicans approve of what Biden's doing at the border. And I don't know who those 4% are. I don't know. But his poll numbers are a disaster on the border. He has great poll numbers on the virus, by the way. And he, this is the only thing that Joe Biden has done. There's been one thing the Biden administration did when they got in that they didn't touch and blow up. One thing. That's the virus. We just stay the course on this. Trump had this set up. We're leaving it in place. They stayed the course with everything Trump did, and that's his highest marks as president. The stuff that he didn't touch, that Trump left behind, highest marks. We know he's going to hurt the economy. This thing's going to be a disaster for the stock market. Raising taxes is bad for everyone, except the Democrats. We got a lice outbreak with the kids. 1 in 7 with COVID are coming in. Joe Biden's dog bit another staffer. The first dog had a second bite. This guy can't control his dog. Staffers go walk the dog for him because this is our king and queen. You know, Joe and Dr. Jill are our royal family now. Well, really not. Obama's the royal family. But they got to have people walk their dogs for him. Darn German Shepherd keeps biting people. They sent the dog home to Delaware. I got to bring the dog back and make it look good. He bites another one and then needed a medical attention. So it was a pretty serious bite. Joe Biden is declining the first pitch at the Washington Nationals game this week. Why? Well, think about physically what that might look like a week after he falls up the stairs of Air Force One. We know why. Any of these would be like the biggest story in America right now if it was Trump. If Trump's dog, which he didn't have one, if Trump's dog a second time bit a staffer, what would be happening on CNN? Should we put the dog down? Let's get the Humane Society on here. Let's talk about the problems dogs have as a reflection of what their owner is. Oh my God, it would be nonstop if Trump had a dog that bit somebody. A second time? Oh, stop every other news story. Stuff's unbelievable, man. Unbelievable. It's worse than I thought. It is absolutely worse than I thought. All right, a couple quick hits here. To wrap up this edition, Roger Goodell is the commissioner of the National Football League. He says he expects full stadiums in the fall. They're pushing forward. What I didn't see is if they're expecting full stadiums with masks. Private businesses are lagging behind everyone else with the masks. They're scared to death of the liberals. They believe this is a fallacy. This is wrong. I saw a debate on this yesterday with a couple of people on Fox. This is wrong. They say, no, this is a courtesy. Businesses want their customers to know they're safe because everybody's wearing a mask. No. This is a fallacy. All right? People are vaccinated and people have had this thing. Here's the deal. Going to someone's business is optional. You make the choice to go there. I'm going to tell you right now, more people will stay away because they have to wear a mask at a baseball game than would if they didn't. If you're scared of the virus, if you're really freaked out about the virus, you can still wear your mask at the game. We're talking about mandates here. What virus freak is going to go to the game or not go to the game based on that? I can't even imagine that. If you're really worried of the virus and you haven't been vaccinated or you're high risk or whatever, you're not going to any baseball games. You're not going anywhere. There's plenty of people, unfortunately, that have shut their lives down and said, we're not going anywhere. Right? So the policy doesn't affect them. And I think the Royals at some point need to stop with the masks. They're starting with masks. And I know a couple of people that want to go on this first homestand. They're like, no, we're not doing it. If they tell us we got to wear a mask, we're not doing it. That's not going to a ball game. That's still sitting there every moment realizing you're being controlled. It is. And I get it. I totally get it. And I think the Royals need to drop it. I think private business is lagging behind because I think they've got it wrong. I think they're actually keeping customers away by having masks because the government entities are lowering the restrictions on all this stuff everywhere. Look, we're reaching herd immunity. We can all see it. We all know it. Everybody knows this. So great. If the Royals want to do a mask for a month, fine. But at some point, step up and do this. And Roger Goodell, if you want full stadiums, and I'm, again, this is a vague guess, but I'm guessing 75% of the people who go to NFL games are conservative. All right, drop the masks. Drop them. Let's go. Let's go fill the stadiums this fall. Let's not be afraid of backlash from the media or liberals. Let's go live as Americans. Oh, I saw this story. The first Hummer EV. You guys know what the Hummer EV is? This is from GM. They're coming back with the Hummer. It's the electric vehicle. It is not cheap. You can order one at robertsrobinson.com or call Roberts Robinson. If you want to get one, you can order one. Mike will order it for you, put you in line. It takes a while to get one built because people are lining up for them, right? This new Hummer EV is something else. I don't think they're ever really going to be available like on the showroom floor. I don't think they're going to make enough of them to do that. I'm not sure. Maybe at some point they'll get to where they're out there and they're on the showroom floor, but you can go online and do it. You can write down the dealer you want to have it delivered with, or you can just call Roberts Robinson. They'll walk you through the whole process. But this Hummer EV is incredible. And the very first one has the VIN number VIN001. And so GM sends it to the Barrett-Jackson auction in Scottsdale Saturday night, which is where all the big money comes in on the car auctions. And it goes for $2.5 million. The first Hummer EV off the assembly line sells for $2.5 million at the Barrett-Jackson auction in Scottsdale. And the best part of the story is that money is donated to Tunnel to Towers, which is a great charity. Phenomenal charity. $2.5 million goes Tunnel to Towers, and I think that's phenomenal. So congratulations to GM for doing that. If you're interested in a Hummer EV, call Mike Robinson over at Roberts Robinson in Excelsior Springs. Just ask for Mike or Tim or one of the guys there, and they'll walk you through the process. If you want more information, they can send you the proper website to learn about it. This is going to be a very, very, very popular vehicle. Pizza Hut is redesigning 1,500 stores. So when I was a kid, we didn't eat pizza until I was about 15 or 16. We had a place called Straw Hat in Mission, and that was the first pizza I ever had. I wasn't really familiar with pizza. My family wasn't big on any ethnic food. I guess you'd call that ethnic food at that point, right? So we were meat and potatoes. You've heard the term meat and potatoes. My parents grew up in the middle of Kansas. The first German ancestors that came over grew potatoes in America and then had farms with, you know, they grow their own chickens or cattle or whatever it may be. Meat and potatoes. That's it. We were a meat and potatoes family. Most everything we ever ate was meat and potatoes. My mom would find some fish on Friday. That's where I learned to despise seafood because it was not very good fish and the house really smelled bad and I didn't like it. And so that's where I learned that. But anyway, that was it. So we didn't really, I think by the time I was about 10 or 12, there was a place called Davila's opened down in Mission and I had my first tacos. You know, our school lunches were hot dogs, hamburgers, peanut butter sandwiches. They were Americana. We didn't really have pizza and tacos and things like that, right? It got there. I just grew up at the time where it changed, right? So by the time I got to high school, we had those things. My first pizza was Straw Hat Pizza, but I grew to love Pizza Hut up on Shawnee Mission Parkway, and I had a friend named Bob Jung that worked there, and he used to get free pizza, and I loved the Pizza Hut pizza. You get free pizza at the end of the night because people wouldn't come get their pizzas. You'd call them up and say, my name's Kevin, and here's my phone number, and I want a large Canadian bacon and hamburger pizza, pan pizza. And then they never came and got it. And they'd keep it warm for a couple hours. And Bob would say, hey, this is a couple hours old, but it's still warm. It's ours. Great. We got it. Free pizza. I loved it. I love Pizza Hut. And I would hang out in there and wait for him to get off work and things like that. I loved being at the Pizza Hut. Pizza Hut's redesigning 1,500 stores. You know, we don't go into restaurants anymore. Pizza Hut's redesigning every one of these to have a Hut Lane, which is going to allow you on your app or online to order your pizza and just drive through and pick it up. As we know, it's pretty difficult to go to a drive-up window, order a pizza, circle around the other side of the building, and have the pizza ready. So they're doing it with the apps. Chipotle's doing the same thing with their quesadillas. The quesadillas look good. I haven't had them. The only way you can get them is on the app or online, and then presumably you drive through, right? A lot of the Chipotles now have drive-throughs as well. Everybody's going to this. The pandemic has changed everything. So many people don't want to go inside. This proves my point about the baseball game. If you're really scared of going to a baseball game, whether people have a mask on or not, is not going to change it for you. What's going to change it for you is, have you had your shot? Have you had COVID? Are you at high risk? Everybody has different factors and variables. Well, everybody's adapting to this. 1,500 Pizza Hut stores in the United States will build a Hut Lane now, where you can just order and drive through. I think this is going to help Pizza Hut a lot. I do. I don't keep track of the pizza wars and who's winning and all, you know, all that stuff, but I sure remember Pizza Hut fondly, and I guess if they stay alive and this helps their business, I'm for saving any of these great American companies, and they are a great American company. The question I have is your favorite steakhouse going to do this? Because I don't want to drive through and get a steak. Now, the steaks I make for myself at home are really good. I've gotten to where I'm pretty good on the grill making my own steaks. Not as good as the really great steakhouses, okay? Not quite as good as those, but really good. But I hear people say they go to, like, even Texas Roadhouse or something, and they do carry out. I'm like, oh, man. By the time I go over there and pick up that steak, if it's been sitting there for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and then I pick it up and I drive home, I don't know. So I don't know how far this can extend. I guess pizza will work. You can get your pizza home in time and still enjoy a hot pie. Pizza Hut is changing. And we finish with the world of the absurd, SpongeBob SquarePants. An episode has been pulled by Nickelodeon. In this episode, SpongeBob is at the Krusty Krab. Well, everybody's at the Krusty Krab, but there's an outbreak of the clam flu. There's an outbreak of the clam flu. And so they have to stay at the Krusty Krab on lockdown because nobody wants to get the flu. And I think it was a relatively harmless episode of some sort, but now because of the pandemic, they cannot air that anymore. It's been pulled. That's it. SpongeBob episode is insensitive, apparently, to concerns of influenza and quarantine. So SpongeBob by Nickelodeon has pulled an episode. That ought to catch you up with everything. This was a fun episode. Got a lot of good stuff in one day. I hope you're enjoying the podcast. Many of you are hitting the follow and subscribe button. I can't thank you enough for that. So many of you are emailing me and telling me that you've told other people about the podcast. I sincerely thank you from the bottom of my heart for that. So those things are all spectacular. Thank you so much for supporting it. If you have not hit follow or subscribe where you listen to the podcast, please do so. It is exceedingly helpful. I had no idea when we started how much that would help, but it has helped. As that number has gone up, so are the downloads every day, and that is good for business and good for spreading the word about things that are important to all of us. What's important to me is that you listen every day. That's awesome. Thank you so much. Have a great day, and thanks for listening to KKHI.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. For additional VIP-only podcasts, live streaming of breaking news, sports wagering tips from the experts, and in-person special events, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron for as little as $5 per month.
This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.